This is Dan's Mega 65 Digest for May 2025. Character Study. It's upgrade season in the Mega 65 community. We partied hardy for the 10th anniversary last month, and the result is an all-new stable release of the Mega 65 platform, packed with features and bug fixes. A bug fix update to the C64 core, and a new version of the M65 Connect app. We also finished up the screen full of basic compo with 26 entries. For this month's feature article, I'm starting my series on Mega 65 character graphics. It's a big subject that we'll cover over multiple issues. We'll probably take breaks to cover other subjects just to mix things up. Here we go. Mega 65 Platform version 0.97 released. It's here. Over 14 months in the making, the new Mega 65 Platform release version 0.97 is now available. The Mega 65 team recommends that all owners upgrade to this version. Sign into FileHost with your registered owner account, then download the release package appropriate for your mainboard version, either R6 or R3. Upgrade instructions are in the latest user guide. Remember to copy the SD card files to your SD card, including the .m65 system software files and the Mega 65 ROM file. Also remember to install the core in slot 1, then also in slot 0. Upgrading slot 0 to version 0.97 is easy if you have previously upgraded slot 0 to version 0.96. Press Mega Comma from the core selection menu to start the process. If you have an older core in slot 0, you'll need to start from version 0.97 in slot 1, then immediately press and hold No Scroll to reopen the newer version of the core selection menu, then press Mega Comma to proceed. We reviewed the changelogs back in the March Digest. Check out all the new stuff you're getting. C64 Core version 5.2 released. While you're updating cores, be sure to pick up C64 Core version 5.2. This maintenance release fixes several bugs, including the HDMI display bug that has blocked a minority of users with a set of vertical bars. It also adds support for COMOL 80, Simmons Basic, Waterloo Structured Basic, MicroAssembler, and BMP Data Turbo 2000 as CRT files. Huge thanks to everyone testing and contributing fixes to the C64 Core. M65 Connect version 2.4 released. M65 Connect, the essential desktop companion app for the Mega 65, has an update also. Version 2.4 includes richer support for subdirectories, creating new D81 disk images, and many usability improvements. Whether you connect to your Mega 65 via Ethernet or JTAG adapter, or just move a microSD card between your Mega 65 and your PC, M65 Connect is the easiest way to manage your files and perform other tasks. Starting with M65 Connect version 2.4, macOS no longer complains that the app is corrupt, thanks to a long-awaited bug fix in a library that the app uses. As with many open-source apps, the macOS version is unsigned, and the first time you run it will be blocked by the operating system. In macOS Sequoia, open the app, dismiss the message with the Done button, then open the Privacy and Security panel in macOS Settings and scroll down to find the button to give it permission to run, labeled Open Anyway. Thanks as always to Tiger for this great tool. Screen full of basic Compo 2025 results. From February to April, the screen full of basic Compo 2025 challenged us to write a game, demo, or tool using just an 80x25 screen full of basic 65 code. There were 26 fabulous entries. I put together a compilation disk with all of the entries and a browsable menu, download it from FileHost, then try them all. After a friendly round of voting, three winners came out on top. Sokoban by Johan, Escape with Puppy by Lachmana, and Dark Horse Tim by Frederick R. Want to know more about compact basic coding techniques? Check out the 8-Bit Theory's YouTube video explaining his Screenful Compo entry, Screenful Crawler, a 3D maze in just 16 lines. Several entries have already had updates and expanded versions published to FileHost, so be sure to check those out as well. Featured files. More amazing things recently uploaded to FileHost. 2 arcade cores from Muse this month. Russian Attack from 1985 from Konami. And Moon Patrol from 1982 from Irem or Williams Electronics. Megavoxel and Megavox 2, two brilliant 3D voxel demos by Mirage. Tank vs. UFO by Zaidless, a faithful port of the basic game from the VIC-20 user manual. FTL by Sir Geldy, a brief Starfield demo with music in basic. Don't forget that you can follow the Mega 65 Files bot on Mastodon or your favorite federated social media service. The bot posts about both new files and updates to existing ones. If you don't have a Fediverse account, you can also follow the bot's page in your RSS reader. Why character graphics? When you first switch on your Mega 65, it shows a screen with a displayable area 640 pixels wide and 200 pixels tall, capable of displaying up to 4,096 possible colors. The Mega 65's VIC-4 video chip determines the color of each pixel by reading graphics data from memory and generates a video signal that draws the final image to the screen many times per second. If we were designing a graphics system, how would we design the data that describes the image drawn to the screen? One possibility would be to store the color of each pixel. This screen is 640 by 200, so that's 128,000 pixels. With 4,096 possible colors, each pixel needs to be stored as 12 bits. 128,000 times 12 equals 1,536,000 bits, that's 192,000 bytes, or 187.5 kilobytes. That's a lot of memory to dedicate to graphics data. Even if we could find a place to put it in the Mega 65's RAM, it would require substantial computational power to update this memory to draw or animate objects, or scroll a playfield. The most obvious way to reduce the memory demand of the graphics system is to reduce the quality of the image. Using a pixel resolution that's 320 pixels wide instead of 640 cuts the needed memory by half, reducing the number of possible colors to 256, a bit depth of 8 instead of 12, cuts it by a third. Naturally, these changes diminish the amount of graphics information we can display. Instead of 80 columns of text, we can only display 40 columns. A program that displays a photograph has to settle for less detail or less color accuracy. Space aliens are chonkier. There are other ways a graphics subsystem can reduce its capabilities without making such obvious sacrifices in image quality, and this is where things get interesting. Many computer applications do not need the ability to set every pixel on the screen to any possible color at any time. By limiting the system's capabilities to just what common applications need, a graphics system can use less memory to describe the full display and still produce high-quality images. Character graphics are one such scheme. You probably already have a sense of how this works from typing letters, numbers, and symbols at the ready prompt. In the default text mode, each of these symbols, let's call them characters, is a small image, 8 pixels wide and 8 pixels tall. On our 640 by 200 pixel screen, 80 of these characters fit on a row, and 25 rows fill the screen. The graphics system knows what each character looks like from a character set stored in memory, containing the images for each of 256 possible characters, including a blank character to represent empty space. By assigning each character a screen code from 0 to 255, we can describe the entire screen in just 80 times 25, or 2,000, bytes of memory. This scheme uses a monochromatic character set. Each character cell is assigned a single foreground color, and the image in the character set describes which pixels should be set to this color. The graphics system uses another 2,000 bytes to describe attributes of each character cell, including 5 bits to set the foreground color. Each cell can use a different foreground color for its foreground pixels. All other pixels share a common background color for the entire screen, set in a VIC register. Of course, 5 color bits can only represent up to 32 colors, not 4,096. Just as the graphic subsystem uses a character set of 256 character patterns, it also uses a palette of 32 colors. Each palette entry is assigned a 12-bit color setting. The Mega 65 starts with a system character set of PETSCII symbols and a system palette of 32 predefined colors. This character graphic scheme uses very little memory compared to the 12-bit pixel scheme and allows for much faster updates. In exchange, it trades away flexibility in what images can be represented. The entire screen must consist of repeated patterns of 8-pixel by 8-pixel characters selected from a set of 256. Only a single foreground color can be used for each character, and colors must be selected from a set of 32. This trade-off is obviously worth it for text applications, such as the basic screen editor, a word processor, or a BBS terminal program. Less obvious, at least at first, is that character graphics are also useful for graphical displays for some games. The default PETSCII character set includes glyphs that can serve as game graphics on their own, such as the heart, diamond, spade, and club for playing card suits. Some symbols are designed to be combined with others in adjacent cells to draw larger objects. Commodore programmers and artists have been exploiting the default character graphics mode for decades, with spectacular results. Screen memory. Both screen memory and color memory organize characters by row, starting in at the top left corner and going down the screen. For the default 80x25 text mode, each row is 80 bytes, so the first row left to right is represented by screen codes in positions 0 to 79, the second row is positions 80 to 159, and so on. You can tell the VIC-4 chip to use any address within the first 384 kilobytes of memory as the start address of screen memory. This is a special feature. The Commodore 64's VIC-2, in contrast, has restrictions on which memory can be used as screen memory. With the VIC-4, the starting address for screen memory is stored as a 28-bit address in a register called screen pointer, SCRNPTR, at addresses hexadecimal D060 to D063. You can change the location of screen memory at any time by updating this register. This can be used for switching between multiple displays stored in different regions of memory, or for techniques such as screen scrolling. Try this. Set the screen pointer address to hexadecimal 6000. I'll give you a command here. WPoke $D060, $6000, WPoke $D062, 0. WPoke is a basic command that sets two adjacent bytes to a 16-bit value. Here, we're using it twice to set the full 28-bit screen memory address. You are now looking at the contents of memory at address 6000, interpreted as screen codes by the VIC-4 chip, one byte per character. If you did this on XEMU, the screen is probably filled with at symbols, which use a screen code of 0. On the Mega 65, this could be all manner of crazy characters, whatever happens to be in memory at that location. If you did this just after switching on the computer, you may also see that the characters in the top left corner have retained the colors of the rainbow bar of the welcome banner. The VIC keeps screen codes and color codes in separate areas of memory, and so far all you have done is tell the VIC to look somewhere else for the screen codes. Another thing to notice, the screen editor's ready prompt and cursor have followed you to the new screen location. It's cool that this seems to work, but note that not every feature of the kernel, screen editor, and BASIC know how to do this. Some features of the kernel still believe screen memory is where it originally put it. Reset the screen editor, including its screen pointer, by holding Run Stop and tapping Restore. Or just reset the computer. Low and High Resolution Text Modes. The Commodore 64's VIC-2 is capable of text in 40 columns and 25 rows. This was extended for the Commodore 65's VIC-3 to also support 80 columns. The VIC-3 can switch between these two modes. In fact, this is how Go64 mode works. It downshifts the VIC-3 into its VIC-2 compatibility mode, including adjusting the screen to 40x25 text mode. The 640-pixel-wide 80-column mode is controlled by the H640 register, bit 7 of address hexadecimal D031. You can switch to 320-pixel-wide 40-column text by clearing this bit. Here's another basic command to do that, CLRBIT space dollar D031, comma 7. Naturally, 40-column text uses less screen memory than 80-column text. It's still using the same screen memory location of screen pointer, but only reading the first 1,000 bytes to describe the 40x25 screen. The memory layout is similar, organized by rows of 40 instead of 80. Once again, the kernel doesn't know you have changed modes and still thinks the display is 80 characters wide. Re-enable 80-column mode. Set bit, that's S-E-T-B-I-T, dollar D031, comma 7. The Mega 65 VIC-4 can also double the vertical resolution from 200 pixels tall, 25 rows, to 400 pixels, 50 rows. This is controlled by the V400 register, bit 4 of D031. Try enabling it. Set bit $D031,3. If you've tried the screen editor's 80x50 mode before, this might look familiar, except that there's a bunch of garbage on the bottom half of the screen. Also, if you try typing multiple lines, it scrolls at line 25. What's going on? Well, you guessed it. The kernel doesn't know that you've enabled V400 mode on the video chip. The VIC-4 is now reading 4,000 bytes of screen memory, starting at the screen editor's internal location. This space is not meant to hold so many screen codes, and the kernel is using the latter 2,000 bytes for something else. Restore sanity by disabling V400 mode. Clear bit space dollar D031,3. But wait. We know that the screen editor does support an 80x50 mode. Press Escape, then 5 to enter this mode, and notice that the screen is nice and clean, and you can use the full space. How does this work? We can get a hint by inspecting the screen pointer register while this mode is active. Print, space, hex, dollar, open parentheses, wpeak, open parentheses, dollar D060, close parentheses, plus wpeak, open parentheses, dollar D062, close parentheses, asterisk, 65536, close parentheses. Notice the address that it prints. Switch back to 80x25 mode, escape then 8, then enter the command again. The screen editor uses a different screen pointer address for 80x50 mode, switching to a location with more space to use as screen memory. It also keeps track of which mode you selected, so it knows how many rows and columns it should be using in this space. It does not check the H640 and V400 registers in case some smart aleck changed them, so it is easily fooled if you don't switch screen editor modes properly. Can the VIC-4 display text 40 columns wide and 50 rows tall? Only one way to find out. Color memory. Each character on the screen has a corresponding color code assigned to it. The code refers to a color defined in a palette. In the text modes we've seen so far, the assigned color becomes the foreground color for the character, referring to the character set images. The VIC draws an on pixel in the character's color and an off pixel in the background color. Programming color memory is a bit weird. The VIC-4 maintains a whopping 64 kilobytes of color memory from address hexadecimal FF80000 to FF8FFFF. By default, color memory starts at the beginning of this range. The memory layout is the same as screen memory. An 80x25 text screen uses the first 2,000 bytes of this range for color data. Here's something you can try. Print CHR dollar sign, open parentheses 147, close parentheses, semicolon, quote, a quote. That just puts an A in the corner, clears the screen and puts an A in the corner of the screen. and then poke dollar FF8000,4 makes it purple. You can adjust the starting address of color memory, but only within this range. The call pointer register at D064 to D065 stores a 16-bit offset to the start of color memory. Think of it as the last four hexadecimal digits after FF8. So try this. WPoke $D064, $07D0. Now color memory starts at FF8 07D0. Poke $FF8 07D0, $7. That letter A is now yellow. WPoke $D064, $0000. Now color memory starts again at FF80000, and the A is purple again because that's what we stored in that memory address. Buffer switching. Imagine a program that maintains two screens of 80 by 25 text. Such a program would determine two locations in memory for the 2,000 bytes of screen memory per screen, and set screen pointer to the starting address of the screen to be displayed. The program would also determine two locations in color memory for 2,000 bytes per screen, and set call pointer to the current screen's color data. By changing the VIC pointers, a program can make a big change to the display using very little CPU time. While the user is looking at one screen, the program draws the next screen in the other set of memory. Then at the last millisecond, it changes the pointers. As soon as the pointers have changed, the VIC immediately starts drawing from the new screen data. From the user's perspective, the screen switch is instantaneous, and they never see any of the computation that goes into updating screen and color memory. There is a teensy amount of time after updating screen pointer and before updating call pointer, such that the VIC is drawing from the second screen's screen codes and the first screen's color codes. If this is a concern for your program, you can use a VIC raster interrupt to make sure the switch happens while the VIC is drawing the top or bottom border. By the time the raster beam gets to drawing characters, both pointers are updated. Color memory windows. The Commodore 64 only supports a 40 by 25 character graphic screen, so only ever needs 1,000 bytes of color memory. The VIC-2 keeps these bytes among the I.O. registers, at addresses hexadecimal D800 to DBFF. The Commodore 65 introduced AD column mode requiring 2,000 bytes of color memory. To keep this data among the registers and stay compatible with the C64, the VIC-3 has a 1-bit register, CRAM2K, CRAM2K I guess, bit 0 of hexadecimal D030, that switches the upper I.O. registers to act as more color RAM, extending the range to D800 to DFFF. To make it possible to access all 2,000 bytes of color memory without hiding I.O. registers, the C65 also exposes the same memory at addresses hexadecimal 1F800 to 1FFFF. This is outside the first 64 kilobytes of memory, so a program has to use the 4502 CPU's indirect addressing modes to access it. A program could also use the 4502's map feature to associate 16-bit addresses with 28-bit addresses. Personally, I only use map for executing CPU instructions in upper memory and use indirect addressing for data. You have to be careful with the map feature to not accidentally unmap your program while it is running. The Mega 65 supports all of this. D800 and 1F800 are the beginnings of two equivalent windows into the color memory starting at FF8000. If the first 1,000 or 2,000 bytes of color memory are all you need, you can use these legacy methods, perhaps for the added convenience of D800 being in the first bank. Remember that 80 by 50 text mode uses 4,000 bytes of color memory, which is more than these windows can see. There's one rather large caveat. These windows always reflect the top of color memory at FF8000, not where call pointer is pointing. If you set call pointer to 0800, D800 and 1F800 will continue to represent memory at FF80000, and you won't be able to reach any of the memory that the VIC is using to paint color on the screen. The windows don't move, which limits their usefulness. If you're not using the windows, there's a neat trick you can do here. By setting call pointer to 0800, the windows point to memory that's not being used, from FF80000 to FF807FF. With this setting, you can use the windows as regular memory for other purposes. If you need to be really technical, this memory is slightly slower to access than other memory in banks 0 through 5, but your program might not notice. Color and character attributes. Each byte of color memory stores 8 bits of information. I mentioned that 5 of these bits select the color, with the ability to select any of the first 32 colors in the palette. The remaining 3 bits apply interesting text effects to the character. The color bits are 0, 1, 2, 3, and 6. Another way to think of it is bits 0 to 3 select one of 16 colors, and bit 6 selects either the first 16 colors, 0 to 15, or the second 16 colors, 16 to 31. Commodore 65 documentation and the Mega 65 documentation describe bit 6 as bold. The idea is for a program to set colors 16 to 31 to be bold versions of colors 0 to 15 when such an effect is desired. Neither the C65 nor the Mega 65 have a boldface text effect, it's just using a different set of colors. Bit 4 causes the character to blink in a steady pattern. With only this attribute set, the VIC alternates between two states, draw on pixels in the foreground color, or draw all pixels in the background color. Bit 5 reverses the character. With a monochrome character set, this means that off pixels are drawn in the character's foreground color, and on pixels are drawn with the background color. Bit 7 underlines the character. The bottommost line is drawn with all on pixels, regardless of how the character appears in the character set. Things get a little dicey when you turn on more than one character attribute at a time. This was so confusing to me at first that I filed it as a bug years ago and even submitted a fix to make it more intuitive. I eventually discovered that Commodore explicitly intended it this way, so I removed the fix in favor of a backwards compatible feature request that we have not yet implemented. For starters, reverse does not take effect if the bold palette is selected. There is no way to reverse a character and also set it to a color from 16 to 31. Blink has a different behavior if any other attribute is set. With no other attributes are set, blink causes the foreground pixels to alternate on and off. With any other attribute set, including the bold attribute, blink causes the attributes to blink on and off, and the character stays visible. Blink and underline, blink just the underline. Blink and reverse, alternate normal and reverse. Blink and bold, alternate between the two sets of colors. I don't like how this makes certain combinations inaccessible, especially the ability to blink a character that's using the bold color set between visible and invisible. But I eventually convinced myself that Commodore had good intentions, and if we want to add more control over the attribute behaviors, we need to preserve Commodore's design as the default. At least it's quirky. The blink plus reverse effect resembles a blinking cursor on the screen editor. It's interesting to notice that this is not actually how the blinking cursor works. Just as on the C64, the C65 default character set consists of 128 characters, followed by their reversed equivalents for a total of 256 characters. The cursor blink is actually modifying the screen code, switching between the reversed and non-reversed variants of the character under the cursor. That seems like a waste, considering there's a blink reverse mode that achieves a similar effect. The cursor could just set these attributes, and the default font could contain 128 more useful characters. Unfortunately, an attribute-based cursor would be constrained by the unusual way that attributes combine. If an attribute-based cursor were above a character using the bold palette, the cursor would set bold and reverse, which cancels the reverse effect. Earlier versions of the Mega 65 ROM attempted this, and we had to go back to the screen code-based cursor because users noticed that the cursor would vanish when using the upper 16 colors. A look ahead. Video modes. In this digest, we introduced the main idea behind character graphics, representing a screen as a coarse grid of characters instead of a fine grid of pixels. Restricting the flexibility of the display to a common category of applications saves memory and compute time, an essential resource on microcomputers. We saw how the default text mode of the Mega 65 displays a grid of 80 by 25 characters, selected from a set of 256 characters, each displayed in one of 32 colors. Programs can manage display memory using pointer registers. We also took a brief look at how the text display can be switched between two horizontal resolutions, 320 pixels or 640 pixels, and two vertical resolutions, 200 pixels or 400 pixels, each combination fitting a different number of characters on the screen. Vintage video systems typically support multiple video modes to give programs the opportunity to choose their own trade-offs of capabilities and costs. Over several digest articles this year, we'll explore more features of the Mega 65's character graphics system. We'll see that many of these features involve switching modes that adjust specifications and change the way screen and color memory are interpreted by the VIC. Next month, we'll dive deeper into character sets and color palettes, both of which can be completely customized by a program. We've visited custom character sets a few times in previous digest issues, and it's about time we lay all the cards out on the table. We'll also play around with some multicolor character graphics modes from the VIC-2 and VIC-3, and work our way up to the crown jewel of Mega 65 VIC-4 character graphics, Super Extended Attribute Mode. If you're as excited about this series as I am, please consider supporting this digest. Visit ko-fi.com/DDDAAANNN. So much to do, so little time. See you next month. For more, visit my website, dansanderson.com/mega65.